But I want to remind you how we started. We started off by saying in the very first week that I would not make church about anything other than about Christ. Meaning this, is that I'm going to be a contributing church member with my time, my talent, and my treasures. I'm going to be a contributing church member, which means I'm not going to be a consumer Christian. I'm going to be a servant Christian. And then we had people that signed a commitment. Now, the first commitment sign, if you didn't get a chance to sign it, is in my office. We'll get it out. And then last week, by commitment number two board you see over here, we talked about this, that I would be a unifying church member. Now, what does that mean? That means I would be in unity. Now, let me just ask you, do you always agree with everyone in your family on everything? Be honest, you probably disagree with yourself on some things. Am I right? I even argue with myself, and I never win. No matter what side, I never win. And so what this means is that I'm going to put my personal preferences aside, and I'm not going to make church about my stuff. And that's what we're talking about today. I don't want to make Lifeway about my preferences and my privileges. Many times when people are looking for a church, what they're looking for is, what can I get out of this? And then that's very common for people to say, well, I'm looking something for my children. I need a ministry that can be a blessing to my family. I need something for my kiddos. I need something for me. And that's great. But I pray you don't let it stop there, because the growth pattern we want you to have, we want you to continually be growing and maturing as a Christian, is that you not only find a place to be served, but you find a place to serve. And so that's what we're talking about this morning. I want to share two examples with you. I've shared this before, but I want to go a little more in detail this morning. I won't ask you to raise your hand, but are you a member of a country club church? You know, a country club church. You know what it is to be a member of a country club? Now, many years ago, an individual that's a member of our church that didn't know me that well, he volunteered to, sponsor me to the Cuero Country Club. He said, well, I'd like to sponsor your family. I'm like, I got to have a sponsor? I mean, I can't just walk in and go, you know, hey, I want to be part of your club. And like, well, it's really good to have a sponsor. And I'm like, well, look, brother, here's what's going to happen. You're going to get me in your club, and I'm going to show up at the pool with my cutoffs and like a Motley Crue t-shirt, and I'm going to do cannonballs with the little kids and stuff. And then not only are they going to kick me out, but they're going to kick you out for inviting me. So I'm probably not the guy you want to invite to the country club. But, I mean, we got a tank we can go swimming in at my house. But here's the thing. When you're part of a country club or any kind of club, but if you're part of a country club church, here's your mentality, because today it's all about your attitude. Listen, you will never change your actions until first your attitude and thinking change first. Is that right? Actions follow thinking. Your attitude is built by what you think about something. So today it's all about having an attitude that my church will not be about my preferences and my desires. I'm going to make it about reaching other people that don't come to church here. And so with a country club mentality, let's just spell it out. If you're a member of a country club, you pay dues, am I right? And what do you expect by paying your dues? You expect certain privileges to be afforded to you. You expect to be treated with the utmost respect. And you expect to be waited on. Why? Because you're paying for it. You see yourself as a customer. You are the consumer. So if something is not to your liking, to the way you want it done, if you're a member of a country club, the very first thing you're going to do is you're going to notify staff. You see something that's not the way you think it should be. You're going to notify the staff. You're going to notify an employee there. You're going to go to the manager and you're going to say, excuse me, I am a member of this country club and I do not like X. I do not like that. I do not like them. And I expect you to do something about it. And I expect you to do it now. And I expect you to do it with a smile on your face. And what you want to hear out of their mouth after that is, yes, ma'am, or yes, sir. Am I right? I mean, if I'm paying dues somewhere, I want it done my way. I have a lot of friends in law enforcement, and I love when they pull someone over that was obviously breaking the law, because let's face it, they don't just pull people over for the fun of it and they go, I pay your salary. Yes, sir. That's why I've got to give you this exorbitantly large ticket because you haven't contributed lately. I wish that's what they would say, but they have to be politically correct. So when you're a member of a country club, you expect the temperature to be to your liking. The chairs must be to your taste and style. And Lord forbid, if it lasts longer than 5 minutes when you think it should end. So when you're a member of a country club church, you walk in and say, I don't like that, and I don't like that, and I wish they'd have done this, and who decorated this? See, when you're a member of a country club church, you think it's all about you and your preferences and your desires. But I want to share with you that Jesus' opinion was churches shouldn't have country club mentalities. They should have battleship mentalities. Anybody serve in the Navy? Any jarhead Marines? Any Marines? Because the Navy drove you everywhere you went, right? When you get on a battleship, when you get on a ship, a military ship, one of the very first things you do is you find out your battle station, which means when it's time to go to war, you have a place where you go and you fight from. You have a specific job. You go to that place, you put on your helmet, your flag jacket, and you fight from that position. See, when you're part of the country club, you walk in and expect somebody else to do your fighting for you. I wish I could tell you how many times I've had somebody look down their pointed nose at me and say, Pastor, I pay your salary. Lord, help me. There have been times I just wanted to say, you're not doing a good job at it. When you're a part of a battleship mentality church, it's not about you. It's about the other people. You see, it's very easy to think church is all about me and that Sunday morning should be to me because, well, for goodness sakes, I'm paying for this. And that's not what God has called us to be. A battleship mentality church is a church where there's an attitude of service, not being waited on, but to serve. That means you plan to go to battle, you expect to go to battle, and you do go to battle. The most frustrating thing to a member of the military is to train and train and train and never get to go to war. Never get to do what you've been training to do. It's kind of a letdown. And so I want you to compare those two types of churches this morning. A country club church or a battleship church. And I want you to tell, I want to tell you that it all starts with our way of thinking and with our attitude. So, and Jesus made it clear he's looking for servant mentality. He's looking for battleship Christians. And I want to tell you that I haven't always felt this way because when I left an established church, And all the easy things that come with everything already being in place to start a church in my living room, it was quite difficult to do. And I had to realize very quickly that I wasn't in Oz anymore. I wasn't in the tucked away neatly in the Bible Belt. I was coming down south where there's just not a lot and they don't do things the way they do them up there. And so I stood in my living room. Y'all picture this. I stood in my living room with people sitting on the couch and in folding chairs. Because they were crazy enough to come to my house. It's kind of like how cults do it, you know. So they're sitting there, and I would repeatedly say, God doesn't care what you wear. God's not interested on the outside. He's interested in the what? Y'all say, wait, he's interested with what's on the inside. Yeah, I know. I use that tired, worn out line, and I thought I meant it. And finally, a gentleman walked up to me in my living room, dressed me down, and he goes, hey, buddy, you need to quit saying that. And I'm like, why? He goes, you don't believe it. I said, yes, I do. I say it. He goes, you don't believe it. You stand there in a suit. And you tell me it doesn't matter how I come to church. You're never going to reach people if you wear a suit and you tell them it doesn't matter that they don't wear one because you don't look like us. So therefore, we're not going to accept you as one of us. I'm like, well, what do you want me to do? He says, don't wear that suit. I'm like, I'm very proud of this suit. I didn't say that, but I mean, it was one of my favorite suits. Because when you're a pastor, you have a lot of penguin suits. You marry people in them. You bury people in them. You do everything in a suit, you know. And it's kind of a nice way to hide. You know, you get it on your suit and you're like, I'm protected. And so I had some tough things to do. So the next week, I took off my tie. I put on my suit, but took the tie off. I kind of did like this. I'm like, whew. And honestly, I was looking in the closets to make sure one of my professors from seminary wouldn't jump out and literally cut me off at the knees for not wearing a suit. You don't look like a preacher. So the next Sunday, I got a little braver. I took the jacket off, but I put the tie back on because I do things slowly. And then the next Sunday, I left the tie and the jacket off. And my seminary professors did not attack me. They didn't even find out. I wasn't going to tell them, for goodness sakes. It's not preacherly. And within about 6 weeks, I was wearing jeans and a pullover shirt. And I still thought I was doing something wrong. But then I began to look like the people I was trying to reach. And it was a difficult move for me to make to get out of that monkey suit to do that with. But now when I say it doesn't matter what you wear, people can believe me. Now, how many of you were here last week? And I've always been curious to ask this question. Do y'all remember what shirt I wore last week? Because when I get in front of that closet at about 5:30 on Sunday morning, I'm like going, did I wear that last week? Did she wash it and put it back, or is that where I put it? I'm like, because some shirts I got two of everything, you know? I'm like, did I wear that or did I wear the other one? And I'm like, I don't think I wore that. And so I'm like going, does anybody remember what I wore last week? Okay, great. So I'm going to feel a lot better on Sunday mornings now. But anyway, last week I had a shirt that I had ironed, you know, to wear to church because I ironed my own clothes at home. Because quite frankly, nobody can iron as good as I can. Because once you've been in the military, the cleaners can't iron the way you know how to iron, right, guys? So I had my nice shirt on. I had a nice cup of coffee. And I'm driving to church in my truck. And a young buck tried to cross the country road the same time I was driving down it. Now, he's okay, but my shirt went like whoosh with coffee. And as accepting and lovingly as you are, I knew that wasn't going to work for you. So I always keep a T-shirt in my office, and thank goodness it didn't say Motley Crue or AC/DC. It was a Christian band. And so I came out here wearing that shirt, and I almost felt like, maybe I should apologize for being underdressed. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm a rebel. You know, so I wore a T-shirt to church and I just felt like I'd stolen gum from the store or something, you know. But here's the thing. We can't make it about us. And so what I'm challenging you to do today, the challenge for today is this, is to have a different attitude. And what we're going to see when we look at Philippians chapter 2, we're going to read through verses 5 through 11 first, y'all. And here's what I want you to see. The very first three words of that verse. See what it says? It says, have what? Have this attitude. The Apostle Paul is telling us, and he's telling the church at Philippi, which he's also telling us, because this is for us too. He says, have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus. We're going to go through all these verses, okay? So keep going, verse 6. He says, have this attitude in you, who though he existed in the form of God, meaning Jesus, when he was in heaven, he existed in the form of God, but he did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped. Okay, we're going to keep going. I'm going to explain it later. Keep going. And then verse 7, he says this, but he emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. Verse 8, but found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself, becoming obedient to the point of death, even death where? On a cross. The most painful way to die in that day and time was how? On a cross. The most humiliating way to die in that day and time was what? On a cross. They would strip you naked, beat you beyond recognition to the point of death, then hang you, stretch you out there so that you would literally suffocate to death as people hurled insults at you as you died. Not just humiliating for the criminal on the cross, but also for their family. Because you know, in a place where someone in your family got crucified, that family basically got crucified too, didn't they? Since we don't live in a small town that does this, I've got to explain to you that sometimes we're known by the mistakes and failures of our family. You know what I'm saying? Do you know who that is? Well, that's oh so-and-so. Well, you know his mother, brother, father, uncle, sister. I hope they don't turn out to be like him. We do. That happens. I know y'all don't do it. But living in a small town, most people know everybody else's junk. You know what I'm saying? And if you're not careful, you're going to judge people not only by the mistakes they've made, but you want to judge them by the mistakes that their family members and everybody else has made. And I'm going to tell you what, if you want to live that way, that's fine. But remember, my friend, as you hold that rock in your hand, you live in a glass house yourself. And if you want people to treat you that way, you just keep doing that kind of stuff. But instead, you lift them up and pray for them. What are they doing at church today? I don't know why he's here. I mean, that's how some people are. What are they doing here? Well, my friend, they need to be here almost as badly as you need to be here. You see, we start getting that attitude that, okay, I'm a sinner, but I'm definitely not like them. And folks, we can't have that attitude. Have this attitude that was in Christ Jesus. Verse 9, for this reason also God highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name which is above all names, so that at the name of Jesus every knee will bow of those who are in heaven, on earth, and under the earth, and that every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. You see, Jesus made it clear that we have to have a new way of thinking. As his children, I'm telling you, if you're a child of God, I'm speaking to you. Folks, if you're not a Christian and you got questions and you're hanging out, I want you to know, take off your shoes. You're in a safe place to hear a dangerous message that could possibly change your life. And I hope it causes you to have more questions than you have right now. And I love people that are skeptical of church and of church people and of Jesus and what it means to be a believer. And you're in a safe place. But this morning, the message is to those of you who call yourselves Christians, those of you who call yourself believers. I'm calling you out with the Lord's word this morning. It all starts with what Paul said. He goes, have this attitude in you. That means that we need a new way of thinking. Going back to what wasn't on the screen, verse 3 of chapter 2, it says this. Paul gives instructions to the people, and he says this. I'm going to just give you a little background here, and he says this. He says, do nothing, verse 3. Philippians chapter 2, do nothing from selfishness or of empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another more important than yourself. If we're honest, most everyone in this room, everything you've done today till getting to the chair you're sitting in today, you did it for you, to you, and about you. You didn't care. You did everything to and for and about you. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of what? Say it with me. Humility of what? Mind. It starts with your attitude. And then he says in verse 4, do not merely look out for your own personal interest, but for the interest of others. That's Christ-like thinking. Putting others before yourself. And then verse 5, and he says, and have this attitude in you. He says, this is the kind of attitude that you need to have in you. In James chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, he says, this is selfless thinking right here. He says this. He says, what is the source of the quarrels that are among you? Now listen to what he says. What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? He says, is it not the source, the pleasures that wage war in your own members? He says, you're mad. What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? He's talking to a church. What's your problem? He says, what is your problem? And now listen. Most of the times when Jesus or a writer of the scriptures ask a question, just read two or three more sentences that give you the answer. He says this, verse 2, you lust and you do not have, so you commit murder. Now, he's not saying they went out and took a sword and chopped somebody down, but it's easy to envy what other people have today, isn't it? I'm going to confess, I love toys. I love stuff. Driving on a weekend through Cuero, there's people that are dragging, you know, these giant fifth wheels and driving RVs. Have you ever seen them? Have you ever just, you know, my thing is I'm like going, I want to see what the person looks like that can afford this. So one day, as I'm driving to church, I see this massive, awesome, customized RV. And I'm like, oh, I couldn't afford the paint job on that. And, you know, I just want to see what they look like. So I rolled up beside them. We're at a red light. And I did like this. And for you millennials, this means roll down your window. I know you do this. But this means, hey, roll down your window. And I'm like, I love this thing. I said, you got an awesome RV. He goes, yeah, until it's time to make the payment. The light turns green. We roll off. And I go, sucker. He's not as happy as I thought he was. Yay. He's miserable too. This house has just got wheels on it without a tongue, you know, like the rest of our houses had. He says, you lust and you do not have, so you commit murder. He says, you are envious and you can't obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. And then he says in verse 3, he says this. You ask and you do not receive because you ask with the wrong what? You ask with the wrong motive. Your prayers aren't getting answered. Are your prayers getting answered? If your prayers aren't getting answered, I'm going to be really quick with this about answered prayer because I got in trouble for this years ago. When you don't get your prayers, here's how God answers prayers. Sometimes he says yes. Sometimes he says no. Sometimes he says not right now. And sometimes he says, are you out of your mind? Have you ever prayed and wanted something, but then God didn't give it to you and later you're so thankful he didn't? Listen, that's true because they made a country song about it. They did. They made a country song about that. Maybe it's just not right now. Maybe God says you're not ready for that. But he says, when you pray and you ask for something, and he's talking about greed and being lustful and wanting other people's toys and all these other things, wanting their stuff, wishing you could be like them, wishing you were them. He says, when you pray, he says, when you ask and you don't get it, he says, you're asking for the wrong motives. You're doing it for the, you're asking not necessarily for a bad thing or an evil thing or a sinful thing, but you're asking with the wrong motive. First church I pastored, little lady, when I preached on how to get everything you ever pray for, she says, I'm praying for a yellow Cadillac. You remember, this is so long ago, folks, they made Cadillacs in yellow back then. And she says, I want a Cadillac with white leather interior. You know those churches where you have to walk by the pastor, shake his hand, and say, you lie to him and say, I really enjoyed today? You know them country church, you ever been there before? Well, that was one of those churches, and I'm at the door. Okay, thank you. Thank you for lying to me. Thank you for lying to me. And she said, I'm praying for a Cadillac with a white leather interior. And she says, and if you say God will give it to me, he will. And I said, well, let me just tell you, he's not going to give you a Cadillac with white leather interior unless you're going to go across the track. You know, every town has a set of railroad tracks that normally separate those who have and those who wish they had. You know what I'm saying? I know we live in Cuero and everybody has, but... And I said, God's only going to give you that Cadillac if you're going to drive down across the tracks and pick up all the little children over there to bring them to Sunday school. I said, you're going to put about 12 little kids, scruffy little kids, neighborhood kids, if you're going to put them in that Cadillac and load them up every Sunday and come and show them the love of Jesus, God will give you that Cadillac. Is that why you're getting that Cadillac? Is that why you're praying for it? No. I said, you're not getting a Cadillac. You pray and you ask him, but you ask him with the wrong motive. I said, you need to pray for an old school bus because we need a school bus. Because if you have a desire to pick up children in a Cadillac, let's just get them in a bus because we can get five times many of them in the bus. She never got a Cadillac, y'all. I preached her funeral. She never got a Cadillac. Why? Because she asked with the wrong motives. You ask and you do not receive because you ask with the wrong motives so that you may spend it on your pleasures. Folks, God is not anti-pleasure. He wants you to have a great time. But God wants us primarily to have the attitude of Christ that we're looking to serve other people. So they had the wrong motives. Now the next thing is this, we have to be selfless in our thinking. Look at verse 6 of our context. Verse 6, and it says this, who, meaning Jesus, although he existed in the form of God, he did not regard equality with God as a thing to be grasped. Have you ever met people that after they share their name, they share their title? Have you ever met those people? Hi, I'm so-and-so, executive director, blah, 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 blah. Well, hello, I am blah, blah, blah. Some people, they're known by the position they hold in a company, or by their title, or by their degree. You've met people that have letters in front of their name. I know a couple of preacher friends that say, well, I'm going back to get another degree so I can get some more alphabet. And I'm like, wow, maybe you could spend that time just helping people, but I'm not going to be the one to judge you on that, you know? Idiot. You know, some people are so smart that they spend so much time learning how to do ministry, they don't ever go and do ministry. God has called us to go and do ministry. We live in a town that is so small. I lived in a neighborhood in Houston that the entire town could have been in my neighborhood. We could reach this entire town. Why aren't we doing it? It can't be to us, for us, and about us, folks. It's got to be to, for, and about them. That means we've got to give up some of our comfort. You've got to sit next to somebody that you probably wouldn't sit next to in any other place. You've got to befriend people that don't look like you, that don't act like you, and don't talk like you, but they're still made in the image and the likeness of our Heavenly Father. And that's what we've been called to do. We have been fantastic at come and see. We need to become awesome at go and be. Come and see who Jesus is. Come to my church. Come and see where we praise, where we worship, where we come together, people of all different backgrounds, cops and criminals, upper class, lower class, and people with no class. Come on, hang out with us. Come and see. And now let's go and be. Today, after second service, our youth, I'm so proud to say this, they're going to a widow woman's house, and they're going to be cleaning and got some adults going with them that are volunteering their time in service. They're going to be trimming some trees, hauling off junk. They're going to take care of her house. They're going to make lunch and sit with her and have lunch. And then they're going to decorate her front porch and put up Christmas lights at her house. Our youth are learning how to serve. Pray for them. This is awesome. So you've got to have that selfless thinking. Now, the next one is you have to have thinking like a servant would have. Look what he says in verse 7 and 8. He says, but Jesus, he emptied himself, taking on the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men, being found in the appearance of a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even what? Death on a cross. Now, go back to verse 7 and see this. See this. But he emptied himself, taking on the form of a bondservant. Does anybody know what a bondservant is? How many of you actually went to school back when they taught history, like American history? You remember the term, the indentured servant? That means that somebody comes to somebody and says, hey, I got nothing. I got no money. I got no job. I'm going to be in your service. I'm going to voluntarily become your servant. And then they say, okay, for this period of time and this amount of money, you're going to be my servant. You don't serve your own will or wishes. It's all for me. And you say, yes, I will. You sign the contract. You became an indentured servant. You became a bond servant. Jesus came and he became a bond servant. And he did what? And being made in the likeness of men. I know you've seen the pictures of Jesus. He's got that halo. You've seen the pictures of the halo Jesus pictures? No, folks, that's not real. Turn it over. Next church you go in with one of those, just say Glenn said it was okay. Pull that picture off the wall. Turn it around on the back. It will not say this paper manufactured by Kodak. It will not say Fujifilm. It's a painting. Jesus didn't walk around with a halo everywhere he went, y'all. The Bible actually says, and historians outside of the Bible that weren't even believers back in that day and time said, he's nothing to look at. He's not a special looking dude. They say that in a crowd of people, you couldn't pick out Jesus by what he looked like. But you could pick him out by the words coming out of his mouth and the actions that he would take. Seriously, as I look at you and you look at me, honestly, do we want to be known by our looks or would we rather be known by our words and actions? I'm going for words and actions because I gave up on the look thing a long time ago. You know, I don't even use the mirror anymore. I'm just like going, is this safe to take out? And that's all I do. I do the deodorant and toothbrush thing. And then that's for you. It's not really for me. Think about it. Jesus didn't look like Cary Grant or a movie star. You didn't know him by what he looked like, but when he opened his mouth and began to teach it, the Bible says that he taught with authority. Jesus wasn't known as a great preacher, y'all. He was known as a great teacher. A great teacher. When words came out of his mouth, people would say, we have never heard anybody teach with this kind of authority. That's how preachers should preach today, with authority. We shouldn't apologize for what God has told us to do and how we are to live. But sometimes pastors are so afraid of hurting people's feelings. See, they don't want their country club members to leave. Folks, we need to be a battleship church, not a country club church, because I will never please all of you. In first service, I almost got pneumonia because I said, raise your hand if I've ever disappointed you. And they were out there doing the wave and everything, you know. If I haven't disappointed you, I will. If I haven't let you down, you haven't been hanging out with me long enough. But we have to be servant thinking. John 13:4, little window into the last night that Jesus was a free man. They had the Lord's Supper together. They did the wine and the little piece of bread thing, you know, my body broken for you, drink this in remembrance of me thing. It says in verse 4 here, it says that he got up from the supper. They got done eating. He got up and he laid his garments aside. He took off his outer cloak. And it says, and taking a towel, he girded himself. And you know, guys, back then, guys wore them like a kilt, but it was like longer, you know what I'm saying? And to gird up your loins, you're going to see this in the Bible, so I'm just going to demonstrate it for you, okay? That's when you take the front and you grab it like this. You take the back, and you got to do like this to do it. Women that have ever had a dress and tried to wear, you do that. You take the back and you kind of do like this, and you pull it up, and then they tuck it in their belt. See, now they were ready. Soldiers could fight that away. You could do battle, or you could plow a field. That's called girding up your loins, getting ready to go do something. It says he girded up his loins. He girded himself up and he took a towel. And then the scripture says that he got down in front of his disciples. He's about to go and be falsely accused multiple times. He's about to be beaten beyond recognition. And he's going to the cross. The last thing he does for his disciples, he shows them an object lesson in humility. And he tells them, who wants to be the greatest among you? He must also be your servant. These guys had argued. Imagine if you spent 3.5 years with Jesus and y'all are walking down the road and you know Jesus knows everything you're thinking. How would you change your thinking if you knew? Because guys, you think your wife can read your mind and she's got you buffaloed and it'll last the rest of your life. Where's mine? Shit, she back. I gotta, y'all watch my back. So we're afraid because we think they can read our mind. But Jesus could. Jesus knew what they were thinking. And they were saying, okay, well, if it is true and he's going somewhere, one of us get to be the boss. And then they started. You want to know where they got the idea for Survivor? Right there in the Bible. Peter, James, and John go, hey, we're smarter than the rest of them. Those guys still smell like fishermen. Let's get Matthew, the tax guy, in here. And we'll have this team. We'll vote them off. And then I'll be number one, of course, and y'all all will be number two, three, and four. I'll be more important than the rest of the people. And Jesus knew they were playing this one-upsmanship game. So what does he do? The last thing for his disciples is an object lesson on humility. This is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, y'all. This is the one who spoke the universe into being. This is the one that paid for the sins of the world. What did he do? He took that towel and a basin of water. He got down on his knees. He got down on the floor. He put their dirty feet into a basin of water and he poured water on them. He washed their feet. Let me tell you this. Let me tell you how that goes. In that day and time, if you could afford a servant, when someone would come to your house, the servant would meet them at the door. Because listen, everywhere they went on foot. And if you were well off or so, you had one of those Cadillacs, a yellow Cadillac called a mule. She'd ride on a mule. But most people walked everywhere they went. So they had all that dusty feet on their sandals. So before you came into the rest of the house, you would sit down and you would sit there while a servant removed your sandals, poured water on your feet, then took a towel and took the road dust off your feet and dried your feet. Now here is Jesus with his disciples. And he sits down to wash their feet. Folks, what was he doing? He was teaching them something. Whoever wants to be the greatest among you must become what? Least among you. If you want to be first, you've got to be willing to be last. The first shall be last and the last shall be first. That doesn't mean you cut line on Fellowship Sunday to eat. What it means is that if you want to be the greatest, then you've got to be willing to be last. Because when you have a heart and an attitude of humility and being last, then you can be greatly used by God. Somebody says, Glenn, I'm a very well-heeled businessman. I'm very intelligent. I have letters behind my name and paper hanging on the wall. I want to be a great help to this church. Great. Do you know how to clean a toilet or can you cut grass? That is so far beneath me. That's not a servant, y'all. That's not a servant. Humility. Have this mind in you. Have this attitude in you that Christ had, that having the form of God wasn't hung up on that. Some people, and I say this at church, y'all, we don't have a lot of money. We don't have a lot of help around here. We're going to be asking people to start committing to service. But here's the thing. When somebody wants to start a ministry, they're like going, well, what do we call it? I'm like, call it whatever you want. And I'm like, do you want a title? Well, sure. I said, well, make it up. We can't afford to pay you, so you get to make your own title. So we have people here that are the executive director of lawn and maintenance and procurement of inventory. These are the people that cut the grass, y'all, and pull the weeds out of the flower bed. When you volunteer for ministry at Lifeway, you get to make your own title. And I'll introduce you as that. I'll even get you a badge that says it. See, we can't afford to pay you, but we can afford to give you any title you want. Wouldn't it be great at your job if you told your boss, you go, hey, I'd like to make my own title up. What would they say? No. Let's do your evaluation right now, they say. So we got to have that attitude of being a servant. Now, the last thing is you see it in verse 8. We have to have sacrificial thinking. We have to think with sacrifice on our mind. Verse 8, he says, being found in the appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. The most humiliating way to die in that day and time, the most painful way to die known to mankind, was crucifixion. You literally suffocate. The story goes like this. Even historians outside of the Bible said that Jesus was beaten so severely, he was beaten beyond recognition. He was beaten so severely that they say there wasn't one inch of his skin that wasn't cut or broke open from head to toe. How many of y'all saw the movie? How many of y'all saw the movie? Okay, I want to tell you something. It wasn't true. Because he would have been naked and he would have been chopped up and cut up from head to toe. And he knew that was going to happen to him, didn't he? Yes or no? Did he know it? Did he still go and do it? Let me tell you something. If you become a battleship mentality Christian, if you become a member of Lifeway Church with battleship mentality, is it likely that you might chip a nail? Hello? Well, you might chip a nail. Is there a chance you may get a splinter in your finger? Is there a chance you might sweat or you might actually bleed? Is there a chance that you may have to break a sweat to do service and ministry at Lifeway? Is there the smallest possibility that in your future? Then it will not scare you or amaze you when you do. God expects that of us. A great explorer in the late 1800s was going to the Antarctic to do an exploration trip. And he needed a crew of men that were tough men. And so the advertisement that he put in the paper to circulate for crew members didn't say, we're looking for highly energetic men with outdoor mentality and we're looking for guys and this is going to be hero type stuff. He said, this could possibly lead to your death, but we need some adventurous men who are willing to sacrifice and go on a journey that you may not come back from. He had more volunteers than he knew what to do with. If Christ was willing to go and die on a cross for you, you could possibly take a few minutes of your day or maybe break a sweat for him. That's what we're talking about here. Is it? Church will not be about my preference and my personality. I'll be honest with you. You know the style of music we use right now? Don't raise your hand if it's not your favorite. But it was never my favorite either. But now you'd have to wrestle it. Quite frankly, when it comes to somebody, say, what style of Christian music do you like? I said, I don't care if it's hip hop, jazz, or whatever. If they say in Jesus in a positive way, that's my music. Because we're going to reach people with different things. And I want to tell you, 12, 14 years ago, this is not the vision that I had of where Lifeway would be. I did not see any of you here. And you probably didn't expect to see me here either, right, Odell? It's like, we'll just see what happens. We have to have that sacrificial thinking. So we need members that understand church isn't solely about our preferences and our desires. Now, do you need to be at a church that can meet your needs spiritually? Yes, if you're not getting fed, you need to be in a place that will feed you. If you're not at a church that's challenging you spiritually and mentally and physically and emotionally, you're not in the right place. You're being served at a country club. But those people that are in ministry today will tell you there is no greater feeling than going from being served to serving others. Because as young Christians, when we become a Christian, the first thing we do is we get excited about Sunday morning. We get excited about singing. We get excited about being with other people. We sit there and say, oh, I love the message. Oh, I'm just learning. I'm getting fed. We love that stuff. But it doesn't stop there, folks. It doesn't stop there. That's your starting point as a believer in Jesus Christ. And so some people need to be gently nudged with a crowbar and a hammer out of their complacency. That being part of a church isn't finding one that meets all of your preferences, but it's finding one where you can help meet other people's needs. See, a couple of years ago, I had a church member tell me, he says, you failed to shake my hand two Sundays in a row, and I know you saw me. And I said, you're exactly right. I saw you, brother. But I walked right by you to meet somebody that's not a member of our church. And I don't know if they had hurts or hang-ups. And I don't know if they'd been beat up by churches or pastors or denominations. I didn't know, but they were a guest and I went to see them first. And I will always meet, greet, and shake hands with our guest first. So, tenderhearted church members, please be advised. I know you're here and I love you, but I will walk past you to shake a guest hand. Please develop that same mentality. And this church member, he set me straight. He says, I'm going to tell you something. And he put that crooked finger in my face and he says, you better remember the people that helped you get to where you are now. It took a lot of Jesus in the next few minutes. The point is this. I told him, I said, it's not about you. It's not even about me. It's about us reaching those other people that don't have Jesus. And I wanted to make a shirt that says, it's not about me. And I was going to pass them out to everybody. But some of you know what I'm making. You know I can't afford to buy y'all all shirts. It's not about us, folks. It's not about us. It's about reaching those that are outside the kingdom walls. It's about reaching the people that don't know who Jesus is. It's about bringing people in that have fears, some unjust, about who we are as Christians and what we actually believe. We don't hate people that don't believe like us. We don't hate people that have different lifestyles than us. God has called us to love everyone, even our enemies. Yes or no? That doesn't mean we like what they do. And we're not going to take pickets and go, we're not going to picket their house and burn crosses on their lawns. God has called us to be a conduit of love and acceptance. You can accept a person without accepting their actions, can't you? Can we love people that are alcoholics? Can we love people that have all other kind of hurts and hang-ups? If you can't, you're in the wrong church. Because we've been called, listen, people are what? Starts with M, ends with S-E. People are what? People are what? Messy. Churches are made up of what kind of people? Messy people. If you're going to be used by God, you are going to be hanging out with? See, he's like, oh, messy people. You're going to be hanging out with some very messy people, which means to serve the Lord, your hands may get dirty. You may have to go like that with somebody. Know what I'm saying? You can't do the one-arm hug. You're like, God loves you. I'm trying. I just want to go on record to tell you that we have some extremely messy people at Lifeway Church. I just wish y'all could be proud of that and just say amen. Not that you're messy, but you found a place where you can be messy as God is sorting out your heart and life. You found a place where you don't fit the mold. And God knows we don't fit the mold either, do we? We have been called to reach the people that are unreachable. We've been called to reach the people that never thought Christians would show them any love or kindness. We have been called to reach messy people because life is messy, churches are messy, and let's face it, within your own family, it's messy, right? I'm not asking for volunteer war stories, but your family's kind of, I'm going to use a very polite, your family's jacked up, isn't it? Right? I mean, nobody here is willing to write a book on your family, are you? Well, let me tell you something. There are some people with messy families like yours. And when we come together, we make one big messy family. Thank God for messy people or the church would have nothing to do. Sit around and gloat about how wonderful we all are, right? God has called us to be selfless, to be servants, and to be ready to sacrifice. Man,